There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 1036, March 18th, 2024, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say greetings and racing regards from land down under. Up the mountain we went from Sydney with the original JB. We shall explain gladly. Back to you, Chief.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, the Red Bull saga continues with no end in sight. It's unbelievable. And now that she's appealed, this could go on through the whole season. It's awful. Great battle at Sebring between Bourdais and Deletraz, with, of course, Acura winning at the end. But that was a very, very exciting last 10 laps. Mercedes W15 still has W13 DNA. And this week's interview, ladies and gentlemen, F1 Weekly Familia Louis Jansen with Nasser Hamid, Tour Spa Francorchamps, chicane to chicane. It's awesome. You guys are going to enjoy every minute of that. And of course, I have to remind everybody that yes, we do need your contributions. Keep this program up on the servers. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know, you'll want to. Nas, I know you've been traveling. Beyond traveling, you're now so far away that I can't even remember what day it is. But Nas, welcome to the studio. Please explain, where are you?
Thank you, sir. Well, I am in Bathurst, actually staying at the hotel right next to the Mount Panorama Circuit, thanks to our original JB F1 Weekly Familia member. It is 4 a.m. in the morning here because of the huge 18-hour time difference between Cali and Sydney area. So we have no choice but to do a quickie podcast at this early hours. But we are loving. And Mr. Rogers, before we get into details, my very big thanks, shout out to another F1 Weekly Familia member from the original days, who is also based in Melbourne, but now visiting family in Singapore, Mr. Balraj Dhaliwal. I had an overnight layover in Singapore, and I went there, and he picked me up, and he gave me a little tour as much as we could in the traffic of the Marina Bay Circuit. And man, I'll tell you, in 2013, I was at the Malaysian Grand Prix. Fantastic place, beautiful track, but I just could not handle the humidity of a New York subway station in July. And I said, I'm never going to watch a race like this again. But Singapore, Mr. Rogers, is so beautiful that I have changed my mind, and I am now putting on the agenda for next season to attend the Singapore Grand Prix. So my great thanks to Mr. Balraj for showing me the Marina Bay Circuit. And then also he told me, which I'm not sure if I was aware of this, back in the day there used to be a Singapore Grand Prix, obviously a non-championship on an old street circuit, and he gave me a tour of that. And he told me a very interesting story. He could not remember the exact year, but it was like 1969, 70, somewhere in that region. Before he was a teenager, as 19 years old kid, he went to the race. And you know what the safety standards were in those days. So he said he's standing at a corner, and he showed me that corner. And a car crashed there, nothing serious. The driver got out and then came to the spot he was standing. And Mr. Balraj asked him, are you okay? And he said, yeah, I'm okay. And they had a brief chat. And he had no idea who this driver was till next morning when he reads in the newspaper that some Brazilian driver by the name of Emerson Fittipaldi had a crash in the race. So that was very, very impressive. So after Singapore, I took a flight, which I thought was going to be a three-hour flight from Singapore to Sydney. But man, Australia is really way down under. Singapore to Sydney is 8 hours nonstop. And I had the immense pleasure of flying on Scoot, which is the easy jet version of Singapore Airlines. So, but it got here on time. A very quiet, beautiful Boeing 787. None of the doors came off, so that was good. Otherwise, we won't be doing this podcast. But how are things on the left coast of the USSA?
Everything is simply wonderful. We had Sebring. We had NASCAR at your favorite track, sir, Mr. Bristol himself. So it was awesome. And Bourdais, you know, he's 45 years old, but still a feisty driver. I can't wait till Fernando goes back to these kinds of races in his 50s to show him how it's done. But it was just a great, great race. And now we have great weather over here in the palatial estates, waiting with bated breath for all the details of your trip, Nasser.
Yes, sir. And we're going to have more details in the next week podcast with our Tales from the Trip segment. And this is a quickie. So from Singapore, I got to Sydney, and Mr. Bentley, the original JB, was there at the airport, and I thank him very much. And we came to Mount Panorama, and we also did a guided tour, recorded tour of the circuit, which is very nice. And it's I did not know this. This is a regular street circuit, which is open all year long, except when they have racing events. And they have beautiful houses right by the track, and they don't have a lawsuit like Laguna Seca going on right now. But, you know, in any society, things can change. But the track is beautiful. It is really, you know, it's famous, like Laguna Seca is famous for corkscrew. They have what they call the Big Dipper. And this track is really like, and the scenery is like Laguna Seca also. The track is like an extended version of Laguna Seca. Absolutely gorgeous part of Australia. And a very nice track, and we had a great time. And yesterday we had what he called a typical Aussie breakfast, which was super delicious. And I am having a fair dinkum time here, to say the least. I do have this situation, you know, I'm flying and moving around long flights, so I am waking up at odd hours, and you have to do what you have to do for the love of motor racing. And now we are headed, we're taking a flight, we're leaving to the airport in about half an hour. We're going to fly to Tasmania, and we're going to go to Longford Street Circuit. And Longford is the street circuit where Teddy Mayer's brother, Timmy Mayer, was killed a long, long time ago in the early 60s. So we'll get a report from there also. And obviously, I've taken a lot of pictures as soon as I settle in. Probably when I come back, we're going to start posting these photographs on the F1 Weekly page. And also, you know, at Bathurst, they have a Australian National Motor Racing Museum. A lot of cars from Australian, what used to be V8 supercars. Now they have, it's called Supercars Only. And Jackie Ickx raced here. And look, most of the big names I'm very familiar with. Peter Brock and Craig Lowndes and Garth Tender, whom we interviewed via Skype some years ago. So things are going jolly good. Very thankful to Balraj and JP. And hopefully we will have more on the situation. And, you know, you mentioned Sebring. I'm out of the country. It's the first time I could not go there in many years. And same with St. Petersburg. And I have not watched the race, but I understand it was a great finish. The Wayne Taylor, Michael Andretti team winning with Acura. And then the IndyCar season opener was won by Roger Penske's team, Joseph Newgarden, so very exciting. And a lot of things are shaking and baking from Formula One to Indy cars. Roger Penske is getting some heat from team owners about the franchise fee and what needs to be done. And Michael Andretti has even gone to the extent of saying, and this is interesting about saying this about Roger Penske, that if you don't want to invest in the series, sell it. So what do you make of that, Senor?
I think everybody needs to calm down and take it easy. We've seen this happen, and it's been a disaster occasionally. So, and Penske is such a professional, I'm not concerned at all, really.
Yes. And moving on, sir, the Red Bull soap opera, called Hot Laps on and off the track. Nobody does it better. I mean, like you said, who knows when this will end? And recently there was a report from BBC F1 correspondent Andrew Benson that the lady in the situation has lodged an official complaint about his behavior with Formula One's governing body, which is, of course, the FIA. Still they begin, needles and pins. I was watching an interview, of all the people, with actually here on Australian TV, with Gunther Steiner. There was a big historical motorsport festival last weekend in Adelaide. And he was there, and of course he's rock star with all the race fans. And he said the right thing, you know, they need to get this thing over and behind us as soon as possible for the sake of Formula One. And this just keeps going on, one issue after another. Do you have any comment on this situation, sir?
Yes, I do. Europe is very sensitive with women's rights, and I am not surprised that this is happening, and it's going to continue to happen. I just want everybody to remember the coach, the winning team, and the kiss in Spain. If we remember how long that dragged on, it's similar. I think Horner needs to go just like the coach went. So that's my tip.
Okay. Now, sir, moving on. This was very interesting. Could have heavy implication. Buyer beware. Interesting story on McLaren Group. Now, McLaren Group is different from the F1 team. The report is Bahraini owners of McLaren have hired bankers to find a buyer for their stake in the car maker. And they have been basically forced to pump close to $2 billion because of the pandemic and all the problems they were handling. And I'm sure you've heard of this company called Mumtalakat, which is the Bahrain Sovereign Fund, Wealth Fund. They have a 50% holding in McLaren Group. And they have requested King of Mergers and High Finance, JP Morgan, to find them a buyer. And this is not good news, to be honest with you, but I have a feeling that they will have a nice payday. And I just hope, because we don't want McLaren to become what Williams has become, that something is done very positively. And interestingly, the JP Morgan has been asked to approach people where the money is. And you know who has the money? Chinese buyers. I pay cash. So let's see what happened. And according to this story, losses at McLaren Group were, listen to this, £350 million, which is close to £400 million in 2022. And this is based on accounts published. And I don't know what's going to happen here. What say you on this matter, sir?
Yes, I read that. I didn't want to bring it up after I read it because I've already said and commented about Zach Brown and how McLaren is simply spread out too thin in all divisions. And I'm not surprised. I mean, these supercars are so expensive. And not only that, but after a while, I mean, when McLaren had the cars come out, the first generation of the McLaren, the second generation, I mean, it was exciting, it was new, it was fresh, it was from a great, great Formula One team, but now it's getting a little old, and hey, they're not exactly, you know, they don't have the allure and the je ne sais quoi, Ferrari. So, I like the McLarens. They're very popular here in California. I mean, I see school teachers driving them. I am in California, in the Bay Area, so don't be surprised. But yes, I've always thought they were just way too spread out. And they had to sell their center, which now they lease back. Yeah, there are always issues these days. They're right on the edge.
Okay, sir, moving on. Some sad news. Marcello Gandini, a very famous designer who started working with Bertone, has passed away at the age of 85. And his real claim to fame is designing a lot of, or having a hand in designing a lot of famous cars, starting with the Lamborghini Miura, Ferrari Dino, and Lancia Stratos. And all these cars are just absolutely a piece of art. I am a huge, huge fan of the Lancia Stratos because of their success in rallying. And you will recall many moons ago, we interviewed one of the drivers of Stratos, Sandro Munari. And Lamborghini Miura is also a very beautiful car. Okay, sir, now what we are going to do is we're going to present our feature story of the week. May I proceed with your express written consent, please?
Absolutely. And what I love about this is the involvement of F1 Weekly Familia. There are no newbies here. These people are veterans. They have actually put up with my awkwardness to just listen to you, Nasser. So I'm very impressed. This is an awesome Spa-Francorchamps tour. It was a privilege just listening to it.
Yes, and of course, without the F1 Weekly Familia, there is no F1 Weekly podcast. So my many thanks again to Louis and Miss Didi. Greatly enjoyed their company, and hopefully we will have some other trips to places like Rouen or Chimay. So basically what it is, I received a message from Louis last year, and this has been in the works for a while, that he is making a trip to the old Spa circuit, which I believe was like 8 miles, and if I would like to join this. And of course, the answer is yeah, oh yeah. And passionate fans of history of Formula One will know magical names like Master King, Malmedy, and Stavlo, okay? The old circuit saw magical moments like both Dan Gurney and Bruce McLaren winning in their own cars in back-to-back Grand Prix in 1967 and 68, respectively. Jim Clark took his maiden win here in his typical super-uber-dominating performance. And of course, Senna won here many times, Kiwi won a few times, and we all know who made his stunning debut, shocking everybody, in the 7-Up Green Jordan. So here is Mr. Louis Jensen with many thanks giving a historical tour of the classic Francorchamps circuit. Please enjoy.
Okay, folks, now we present what I call the Didim Dialogue. Mr. Louis Jensen from Didim, Netherlands. Welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you today?
I'm fine, Nasser. And also welcome to you visiting us here in the Netherlands. And also welcome and greetings to all F1 Weekly familia.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. I'm having a great time. Now, I see a Max Verstappen flag in front of your house. How many years do you think this will be out?
Well, it will be out every weekend that we'll be racing this year. We've picked up on this last year, and we bought a big flag from the Max Verstappen fan club. And we're not the only one waving the flag here in this street. You saw yesterday when we arrived that there are also three other houses that have Max Verstappen flags. So, well, probably the next few years, as long as Max will be driving his Formula One car, we'll run this flag for him.
Anybody brave enough to wave or fly the Hamilton or Leclerc flag here?
I don't know if they need to be brave before they do something like that. It's just the way these folks here were in the east of the Netherlands. Well, they are all Max Verstappen fans, of course.
Now, I have a question for you. Formula One became very popular when Schumi was racing, and when he departed, despite Sebastian Vettel winning four in a row, Formula One has never been the same since the days of Michael Schumacher in Germany. Do you think the same thing will happen here in the Netherlands?
Yes, I do think so. I know for sure, because before Max Verstappen came into Formula One, I already had a few colleagues or friends that followed Formula One regularly. And almost everyone follows Formula One, so it kind of indicates that that will change again if Max would retire from Formula One.
Are there any of the, what Clark called, whippersnappers in the junior fields that can come through the system?
No, not too much. No, not a talent like Max Verstappen. You know, before Max, there wasn't one single victory in Formula One by a Dutch driver. And we had plenty of Dutch drivers, of course. And we all now know that this is a one-of-a-lifetime thing, you know. Him being not only a race winner, but also a multiple world champion, that is something that is very special. You know, the Netherlands is a very small country. And it's just something very special that we have a top driver now. And we don't expect to have anyone following up.
Yeah, he is very, very much at the top and maxed out in talent, that's for sure. Okay, now question. I was thinking this morning, we have 24 races. Do you think he will win all races? I mean, both you and I know he can, but will he win all races?
Well, you saw last year, he was very close to it. And it only took one event, the Singapore race, where the team was not prepared, and they couldn't change the cars quickly enough to adapt it. Like I see it now, we have had now two races, and the start of the year has been even stronger than last year. So it's not impossible. You know what? We might bet on it that it's happening. And you'll win all 24 races. Now, that will piss off some people in the world, don't you think?
Well, no matter who does what, you can never please everybody. But his success is making Hemi haters very happy, so more power to them. And speaking of Lewis, Carl Hamilton, him going to Ferrari, did that catch you by surprise?
Oh, yes, it did, yeah. And I think it is very brave of him to do that, because he could have stayed at Mercedes and driving against his teammate George Russell. He's a good driver, but he's not top of the hill. And you see, now in Ferrari, he will meet Charles Leclerc, who is well established within the team. So, yeah, we're looking forward to it. And, something might change in the hierarchy of Formula One. If he were to achieve another championship, that would be really impressive for Lewis.
Now, there is a vacancy at Mercedes. Who would you like to see, and do you think bringing what Christian Horner calls man who brings chaos is a good idea for Toto?
I think Toto really wants Max to be in that car. And if he can get Max for 25, he will not hesitate to do that against all other drivers. Like I see it, that might even happen, you know. If Max is unhappy in Red Bull, and there's a lot of things going on right now, he might do that. Even if he would walk away from a competitive car like the Red Bull is. But for 26, I'm pretty sure Max wants to make a move to Mercedes. There is a little bit of doubt about his new engine by Red Bull powertrains. That doubt is also very much in our heads as Max Verstappen fans. So it won't surprise me if he would make that move. And if it were up to me, I would like him to move next year already, just to stir things up a little bit more.
Yes. Now, speaking of 2026, a lot of rule changes, new engine system, this and that. Who do you think will have the upper? Who will hit the ground running in terms of teams?
I guess Ferrari will. I think Ferrari will, and I think there are the three top teams now, and the only team that hasn't got a works engine or hasn't got its established engine, like we said. Well, Ferrari has made its own engine for a long time, but this is just the thing that makes it really insecure for Max staying at Red Bull. I don't think Aston Martin will be at the top, you know. They don't have their own engine. They are dependent on the Mercedes engine. And I cannot imagine Mercedes making their customer team able to win races when they are not. So, but we'll see. So it'll probably be Mercedes, Ferrari, and we hope Red Bull, but it's very insecure.
Yes. Okay, now, there is a whole lot of shaking going on in Formula One off the track, and a lot of it is instigated by a Dutch newspaper, Die Telegraaf. What is your take on what's going on there, and what do you think will be the end game of sooner or later this situation will come to a resolution? What say you?
We don't know, Nasser. Well, my guess is as good as mine and any other F1 Weekly member. This is something that we can see that there is a power struggle going on. And this, a few days ago, it was about Jos Verstappen. Now it's Helmut Marko. Jos and Max are on the same page. Max also said that he is very loyal to Helmut Marko. So, well, there seems to be something happening every day. I don't really appreciate it too much. I would hope that racing would resume at some point and they concentrate on the racing instead of all the politics.
Okay, Carlos Sainz did not race on Saturday. Young Oliver Bearman was in the race. Were you impressed by his performance?
Oh yes, I was. And I was just happy seeing him being so so happy about it, you know. And we watched the drivers' parade on YouTube before we watched the race yesterday, and he just looked so happy. Did you see his father in the pit box being walking from the one side of the garage to the other? He was a bit nervous, I guess, but it was an incredible thing to see, you know. 18 years old, like Max Verstappen, he was even less prepared than Max was when he drove his first race. So, compliments to him. And also to Ferrari for doing this. They could have as well taken Nico Hülkenberg, for instance, out of the Haas. They showed their support for their young drivers, and that's the way it should be.
I was very surprised that they put him in that race, but that's good, you know, showing faith in young drivers. And speaking of young drivers and non-Max Verstappen winners, if anybody has a chance of winning a race apart from Max and his teammate, who do you think that will be?
I think it'll be Piastri. You see, he's getting better and better every race. I really like his attitude as well. He's very secure of himself. And yesterday he drove a good race. If the car improves a little bit, why not? Everything is possible. He already won a sprint race last year. So, yeah, he'll be my favorite for winning a race as a rookie.
I totally agree with you. Okay, first of all, again, thank you very much for all your help in taking me to Spa and Zolder. And what a message for other members of F1 Weekly Familia all over the world.
Yes, well, I really appreciate the listening to the podcast. You know, I've been a listener since 2009, so I really enjoy this all. And also my wife, she is very fond of the podcast as well. And she likes the dynamic between you and Clark Rogers. So we just want to have you, like you always say, keep up the good work and continue this as long as you can.
That we will try for sure. Thank you so much. Okay, folks, on a cold day, we are at beautiful Spa Francorchamps with F1 Weekly Familia member from the Netherlands, Mr. Louis Jensen. Louis, welcome to F1 Weekly Familia again. How are you today, sir?
I'm fine, Nasser, and I want to give my greetings to Clark Rogers and all members of F1 Weekly. And I'm very glad that you came to visit me and that we are now at the Spa racetrack.
Thank you very much. Very kind of you to invite me and bring me here. So here we are at La Source and the starting grid. So tell us about this wonderful place, please.
Yes, Nasser, I would like to tell you about the old track. You know, before 1983, the old track that went for all those kilometers in this area. So we are at La Source, and I will start with an explanation of the descending section between the hairpin bend of La Source and Eau Rouge. You know that here was the start-finish of the old circuit and the old pit boxes. The track slopes considerably downwards here. So the cars had to press their brakes when they were on the grid to avoid making a false start. Although we must admit that in the past cars were already moving before the green flag was waved. They were treated very leniently, as we can see from the old images. There was no pit wall, of course, in the past. The cars had to steer to the right if they made a pit stop. And they were refueled at the side of the track. And if necessary, the wheels were replaced. Can you remember they had those knock-on, knock-offs wheels? And that they are knocking with a wooden hammer on the wheels?
Absolutely. And I love those videos of cars smoking and almost running down the man waving the start of the race flag.
Yeah. And such a stop would could last up to or more than 1 minute, and the driver had even time to drink some water from a bottle.
But I think Sir Moss went for a cup of tea.
Oh, maybe, if he had enough time in advance.
Okay, folks, now we have arrived at the most famous corner in all of motor racing,
Red Water, also known as Eau Rouge. Take it over, Louis.
We now come to the most impressive corner combination on this circuit. Everybody calls this section Eau Rouge, but in actual fact that is wrong, and I will explain you why. Eau Rouge is the name of the small river that runs under the first part of the bend. The rusty red stones in the river are its namesake. Before 1939, so before the war, the track turned sharply to the left and followed a tight hairpin bend to the right past the old customs office that stood here. The bend was called Le Virage de l'Ancien Douane. And I can hear you thinking, Nasser.
Excusez-moi, will you please le repeat?
Le Virage de l'Ancien Douane, or the old customs house. And I hear you thinking, we are not at the German-Belgian border. So how come there is a customs house over here? But you need to understand that before the First World War, there was the border here between Germany and Belgium. And borders changed after the First World War. But the old customs house was still there. And you went past the customs house, and then the bend went sharply to the left again. And you were almost on top of the hill called the Camel. Now, as we will often see later along the old track, a more exciting corner was sought for by the organizers, especially for the racing cars. The entire circuit, of course, was a public road, but a separate corner just for the racing cars would suit, and the spectacle would be a lot better. The new bend went steeply up the Camel Hill from Eau Rouge. You know what the name is of that bend? It's called Le Raidion, and Raidion means, translated in English, steep bend. So now we're up on the Camel, and we're going on to the Camel Straight. Or are those bends in the old track?
Okay, folks, Louis and I have arrived at Le Combe, which is on the right side of the track, and here comes a Formula One car on two wheels. And on the left-hand side, we have the old portion of the track, which used to be the highest portion of the track. More info on this wonderful spot, Mr. Louis Jensen.
Yes, please. Well, we were at Raidion Corner, and the old track went up through several gentle left and right bends. We now know that part as the Camel Straight. This is straight nowadays, but then back then it was a series of bends. In 1979, it was transformed into the straight section. In the new track, which was put into use in 1983, the highest point of the track was Le Combe. And that's also the highest point of the track of the old track. This continued a little bit further than the current Le Combe chicane. And you went into the Le Combe left bend. We're right now looking at it, and we can see it's got quite a bit of camber into it. And the cars were actually not going full speed through this corner, but like we see on those images, in a gentle drift. Here we can now drive on the old track, because the old track is still public roads. And we will now drive all the way from Le Combe to the other side of the circuit at Blanchimont, and we'll make several stops on the way to explain some more about the old track.
Okay, folks, now we have reached one of the most important and famous parts of the classic Spa-Francorchamps. Commander Louis, you take the lead.
We're now at Malmedy, and we know that Spa was one of the fastest circuits in the world. Actually, there was a battle between the circuits to see who could call itself the fastest road circuit in the world. So Indianapolis was not considered a road circuit, so the battle was between Reims, Spa, and your favorite circuit, Nasser?
Parco Monza.
This was to see which circuit was the fastest circuit in the world. If you look closely now here, Nasser, you can see the guardrail along the road. And this was installed along several corners in the 1970s, after the drivers, led by Jackie Stewart, refused to continue racing at Spa without these safety features. The owners of the circuit had to pay for all this themselves, of course, and they had a lot of difficulty with that. You can imagine, this was quite a long track. The Burnonville Bend was a long, fast-ride bend through which the cars drifted beautifully from the one side of the track to the other one. And after this, the cars arrived at this fast ride combination of Malmedy. And we have stopped here. We are now briefly stopped at the site. Do you know something, Nasser? We are in a chicane.
Nice, very nice. Looks like the original burst up to me.
Did you know that there was a chicane in the old track? That was called the Malmedy chicane. We're in it right now. This was used regularly before the Second World War. And it was only used once in Formula 1 in 1979. So let's go further and let's go to Mazda.
Mazda is one of my favorites from the old classic Spa. So let's go there, folks. Okay, folks, the European support vehicle based in Netherlands has now reached Mazda King. Straighten out the story for us, sir.
From Lacombe, we are still descending, and the cars almost reached their top speed on this part between Malmedy and Mazda. What follows was generally regarded by the drivers as the most challenging and dangerous corner combination of the circuit. The section is called Mazda and was referred to by English speakers as Mazda King. It is actually a very fast S-bend that is flanked by houses on both sides of the track. The drivers try to go through the corners as quickly as possible because after this section there is a very long straight going further downhill. Now, Nasser, have you ever seen the movie Grand Prix?
You know, shockingly, I have.
I believe there's always something of an audio fragment from the film Grand Prix when you start your leader. Well, you can find fragments from the Grand Prix film on YouTube. And if you search for Grand Prix and Spa, you will see an accident. And that accident is actually at the Mazda corner. The film is from 1966, that's the year that I was born. And it is so special because it's in beautiful Technicolor. And it shows you clearly how the circuit layout was, the houses, the racing cars looked like. As if you are driving it today. Now, we now go down the straight after Mazda towards the village of Stavelo. And that straight is called the Hollowell Straight. Here the top speed was reached. If you cut quite fast through the Mazda, you reached your top speed down the Hollowell Straight. John William Hollowell was an English motorcycle racer who crashed and died on this stretch in 1925, at the very beginning of this circuit. It was even before car races were organized. Did you know, Nasser, that there are also two bends in Zandvoort named after drivers who died there in an accident? These corners are called the Gerlachbocht and Slotenmakersbocht. So let's go down to Stavelo.
We shall. Thank you. Now, folks, we have arrived at Stavelo.
At Stavelo, we are at the lowest point of the track now. Before the Second World War, the track went a little bit deeper into the town and then there was a sharp right turn hairpin bend. After the war, a new bend was constructed with a strong camber in it, just before the finish. This was an adjustment to make the circuit even faster, just like when we talked about the Radion corner. They made that corner especially to get this circuit even faster. There were also huge billboards on the outside of this corner. So a steep corner with huge billboards and a whole row of flagpoles with all kind of flags on it. We will later go to the museum in the of the circuit in the town of Stavelo. And then you can see it all again on a maquette. You know, you can see how it was built. I can highly recommend a visit to that museum to all the listeners of F1 Weekly. So that's in the center of Stavelo and it's in the old abbey. It's also a very beautiful building. You'll find lots of historic racing cars and historic motorcycles there. So I recommend that to all F1 listeners.
And that museum is in the town of Stavelo.
Yes, sir.
Okay, folks, now Louis is going to take us back all the way to Blanchimont.
Yes, the racing cars are now driving back to Francorchamps and the track has become fairly flat with some winding bends. The houses here are also close to the track and now there are also many trees alongside the track. Many drivers have also died here when they spun their cars and went into the forest. Past the bends of this section called La Carrière, we arrive at the gate of the entrance to the new track. Here the new circuit connects to the old circuit and the Blanchimont and finally La Source corners follow. The bends used to be much sharper and narrower than on the new track. Fortunately, everything is much safer nowadays, Nasser. But it used to be a beautiful and above all very fast circuit. Okay, Nasser, I have a proposition. Shall we now go to the museum of the track in Stavlo?
A racing car museum?
Yes, ma'am.
Let me think about it.
All right.
Oh, my thoughts are over. Let's do it, baby. Folks, that was a historical tour, and many, many thanks to Mr. Louis Jensen for taking care of this for us. And I hope members of the F1 Weekly Familia enjoyed this. And once again, please come to the museum if you get a chance. Thank you.
Louis, thanks for giving us that wonderful description of each chicane. Your free toaster is in the mail. Nasser?
Yes, sir. Mr. Rogers, I and Mr. JB, original JB, are about to run to the airport. So we're going to end this with Musical Mondial. I want to thank everybody for listening, and please enjoy.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Every time you kiss me, I'm still not certain that you love me. Every time you hold me, I'm still not certain that you care. Though you keep on saying you really, really, really love me. Do you say the same words to someone else when I'm not there?
Suspicion.
Or it's my heart.
Suspicion.
Why torture me? Every time you call me and tell me we should meet tomorrow, I can't help but think that you're meeting someone else tonight. Why should our romance just keep on causing me such sorrow? Why am I so doubtful whenever you part of sight?
Suspicion.
Or it's my heart.